cliffcentral.com.
Sipping tea because it is a Tuesday at 11 o'clock. Thank you for joining me. Cliffcentral.com. I'm Mabali Moloi. Minus my very busy partner in crime who's doing very well for herself these days. She's just bagged herself a nice brand new TV show. Dumi Moraike is not with me this week, which is why I have my very good and capable friend Belinda Khojani joining me.
Good morning.
To do the damn thing. Hey, B.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You're a little bit tired, though.
Yeah, you could put it that way. Just a bit. It is only Tuesday.
Yeah.
The second Monday.
Is that what it is?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't you ever feel like that? Wake up and you just go, is it Monday again? Oh, no. It's Monday
2.0. Correct. No, yesterday's Monday for me was a complete write-off because, like an idiot, I went and I drank far too much on the Sunday.
Raise his hand.
Fuck you.
Raise his hand.
Dude, I was so man down yesterday. Oh, I came in like 6 o'clock in the morning. We did the show. I went back home and I was literally comatose.
Absolutely.
For the rest of the day.
I can relate. I was on a plane with my shades on. Didn't want to speak to anyone. Yeah. And the hostess is like, ma'am, please put your blinds up. And I'm like, do you understand? Because clearly you have no idea. You've just flown in from Dubai. You have no clue.
You don't understand how these aging bodies just, you know, they find it more and more difficult to handle the toxic stuff.
Correct. And we're no longer, you know, the young, supple ages we used to be two or three years ago.
Dude, no.
It just doesn't work.
Absolutely not. But we're with you today. And as always, you can catch the podcast to listen to at a later stage, at your leisure, as they say. Gosh, I was trying to find our WhatsApp number that I can send out to you if you want to send me a message. But now I don't have the number in front of me. And I'm, you know, looking like I don't know
what you're doing.
Yeah. And then Palisa next door is trying to like literally signal the number to me using her fingers.
What I saw was 086.
It's not going
10,
to.
111. What?
It's not going to work.
0869.
0 0 9 7 9 7 4 8 2 0 9.
That's too many numbers.
Zero.
Melissa, have you not been drinking too much?
We tried it.
That was 11 numbers too long.
We tried it.
Are you sure?
Oh, dear. Okay, B, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So listen, man, I see there's a lot of excitement and a lot of talking about this new TV show that's due to air this week, apparently. Married at First Sight, the South African edition.
No.
Yes, yes.
No.
Okay, okay.
No.
Okay, okay. Now, you are familiar with the show because there's an American edition, obviously, which is what you know,
yeah,
you've been watching.
Absolutely.
So very briefly, like for somebody who doesn't know what the show is about, how does it all work? Like what's the premise here?
So the show started probably about 2 years ago in the US.
Yeah.
And it is essentially about two complete strangers meeting for the first time, not at a bar, not on Tinder, not on WhatsApp by mistake in a WhatsApp group. They meet at the altar, literally at the altar. So he's dressed in a tux, she's in a white dress with a bouquet of flowers.
Yeah.
Parents are there in the works and they get married. So literally she walks up to the altar and she says, hi, my name is Mabali. And he goes, hi, my name is Simpiwe. And then the minister goes, let's do this.
But, so do you have to get married on the spot there at the altar?
So there's no time essentially to go, what do you like? Do you have cats? I'm allergic to pet hair. There's no time for all of that. What then happens is they go through the, I mean, it's not a religious ceremony. It's just, you know, an ordained minister then who does the ceremony in a non-religious way. And they go through a couple of, you know, essential vows, like, you know, I'll be here.
You know, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and not find me.
Yeah. And I'm not a psychopath.
Right.
I don't have a jail record, that type of thing.
Goodness, we would hope.
You would think that, you know, and the thing is that, you know, the psychometrics that happen prior to that are so strenuous and intense. I mean, these group of guys and girls go through so many like personality tests to see that they're actually compatible with each other. They may not necessarily be compatible at first sight, but the idea then is to kind of, you know, like a jigsaw puzzle, complement each other. So if it's a person who, you know, is needy and they need someone who would take care of them and see to their, you know, needs, and then they are matched with that kind of person. What then happens then at, you know, three quarters into the ceremony is, so do you really want to do this?
So you can back out if you, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
if
absolutely.
The nerves get
absolutely.
The better of you
absolutely.
There at the altar. And like, hey,
a couple
Simpia,
have. They're
I'm
just like,
sure.
Hey, Simpia, yeah, you are duck, my guy.
Yeah. I don't know.
You hey, look like, you yeah. look like the sun.
Hey? I don't know about all that ass. You
yeah.
know, I don't know.
That all of that is all of that yours. And you don't even get to do like a young spin around or anything. Well, that's what we are led to believe as the viewers, that you walk up the aisle and this person sees you for the first time. Mm. And some people have hit it off. Like literally day one, let's do this. That chick got divorced.
On the day that she got married?
No. So once you get married, once you say yes, you have to live with the person for, I think, 12 weeks or 16 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
So you actually abandon your apartment, or you decide, depending on your work arrangements, who lives where. You live in one apartment, you buy the same groceries, share toothpaste, you know, the usual stuff.
The usual moving in together stuff.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then after that, you get the option then to back out. If you didn't back out at church, you can't back out until the end of the trial period.
So if you didn't back out at church and for some other reason in week two, things really hit the fan,
you're
now stuck with this horrible roommate.
Unless you send your brothers to come and fetch you and your bed and your suitcase, your Louis Vuitton bags.
Yeah.
Then only are you allowed to. Well, you're not really allowed to, because then experts then come in. There's a sex expert. There's a spiritual expert. There's a psychologist. That is a psychologist. And they then come and coach you along the way and help you get through this very traumatic time in your life.
Okay, so this Friday at 8:50 p.m., you're going to get to see six young South Africans do the same thing, go through this whole process that you've just outlined, right?
Right.
Married at First Sight South African edition. Oh, there
look,
is so much.
Look,
there is so much here that could potentially just go wrong or go right.
Explosions from day one. So essentially, the show started off in the States.
Yeah.
And then the next rollout, I think, was in Australia, and they had one season. And if I remember correctly, there have only been two extremely successful couples who have been together, are extremely in love, have children. One in the US and one in Australia.
So that is the success rate of this program, is exactly one couple in the US made it.
One of six.
Okay, one of six.
Yeah, one of six.
So those are the kind of odds that people are working with.
Those are the numbers. And look, you know, to bring it to South Africa, I'm thinking you're going to need a real team of experts.
So let me go through this list of experts, because they were announced a few days ago.
Like
so,
a Sangoma, someone from FNB.
There are so many intricacies that are going to be involved in the South African version, because yes, we are a very multicultural and diverse,
extremely
diverse country. So there are all these different practices that, you know,
extremely.
I, as a Sotho girl, might not be aware of when I now meet my Xhosa husband.
Absolutely.
And he's going to be like, but I want you to do this. I'm going to be like, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Let alone meeting Pete from Bloemfontein. And
exactly.
And the thing is, they don't know who they're being paired up with. You know, you might have the assumption that you are a girl, black girl from Soweto, and you're going to be paired with another black person.
Yes, right.
No.
And then you get there.
And it's a colored guy.
Mm. Or an Indian
from
guy.
From Wentworth.
Or Johannes, from the plus.
And
you've
just got to make it work.
So, I mean,
so who are the experts?
So, okay, so Sam Cowan, she's going to be the presenter of the show, right? So she's going to be there, I don't know, doing her thing as presenter.
She does voiceovers.
No, I mean we all I'm sure we all know who Sam Cowan is. Right. But she's the presenter of the show. Then you've got the relationship expert. This is Paula Quincy, right? Certified Imago educator and professional facilitator and NLP life coach, all right? Okay. So right. That is the relationship expert. Then you've got the counseling psychologist. This is Neo Tsireletso Pule, who earned the MSc Counseling Psychology degree at the University of the Free State. She is currently acquiring a doctoral degree in consulting psychology. Okay. So, I mean, they're not messing around. These are the real deal experts.
These are people's lives.
Then you've got the sex health specialist.
Dude,
so now you've met Olani for the first time at the altar.
Correct.
Now what happens if I'm not attracted to Olani? When are him and I gonna what are we gonna do in the bedroom?
You're going to sleep. And you need to sleep in one bed.
Oh my god.
Yes, you have to. So he's your husband. She's your wife.
At least for like 16 weeks.
Correct.
So the sex health specialist, that's Professor Shingai Mutambirwa. He holds a degree from Medunsa. He's got a private practice at...
I thought you were going to say he has a private jet.
No.
He has a private jet.
He's got his own private practice. Also, you know, huge credentials. And then we've got the financial expert, Winnie Kunene.
From Capitec.
Oh, you know her?
No, I don't. Is she from Capitec? No, she's not.
No, she's not. She studied at business management adverts to attain a postgraduate qualification.
Okay.
All right. So those are your list of experts, right? So these people come in throughout the process of the 16 weeks and they come in to counsel you, to listen to your grievances, to complain about.
Correct.
You know, the fact that Olani has very smelly feet and you didn't know this
because
on the day of the marriage because, you know, he was wearing shoes.
And what you need to understand is that aside from the fact that these are complete strangers, they are also new to the process of marriage. They've never been married before.
Yeah.
So not only is this, call it culture shock, call it, you know, a situation they've never been in because they've never met this person. They are complete strangers, but they've never really been in a marriage. So you've never shared things. You've never shared things like your financial position because you need to make financial decisions in this marriage.
As a team.
Absolutely. You know, rent needs to be paid.
Yeah.
And you can't just kind of hope that on the 25th, you know, someone's going to go, I think today I'll do it.
No, it's a team effort.
Yeah. So you need to put yourself out there in order to, you know, make it through the 16 weeks and see if you want to, because for some odd reason, I know, you know, people are so afraid of failure and they don't want to fail. And I've seen in the other episodes, in the other seasons where people are going, oh, yeah, this is really not working out, but I don't want to go through a divorce.
You know what I find interesting about this is that technically this kind of process that they're using, it's not a brand new process because arranged marriages have existed in many different cultures all over the world, right?
Correct.
And to this day, you'll still find that, you know, from maybe our parents and our grandparents' generation, you'll still find couples who have remained together for all those 40 years.
Correct.
And the circumstances under which they got married was, you know, similar to this process in that you were thrown in together, you didn't really get to, you know, date each other or anything like that, and it kind of happened and then you had to make it work.
I think the difference in that is that, you know, this here is, yes, in as much as it's a tried and tested, you know, formula, but it is also a very scientific formula. You know, there are things, algorithms that, you know, things go in, there's an output, this is the person, this is why it should work, whereas back then the arranged marriage was, you know, things that your parents got involved in, the elders of the church got involved in, kind of the people, you know, people within your society. So it's your parents who went out and looked for someone who was compatible with you, got to know that family, in as much as it was a new thing to you. But chances are, you know the guy from church, you know him from school, you know him because he lives within that community. But there was also a lot of groundwork that happens in a more emotional way that's done with people who actually know you and care for you. And it at no point was it an application process. I mean, there are thousands of people who flock down to the studios on the first day, because they are genuinely looking for the right person to be with for the rest of their lives. And they've tried all else, all other avenues, and it just hasn't worked. And they are looking, seriously looking to these experts to say, you know best. You know the person that I could possibly be with for the rest of my life.
So then, so then when you talk about algorithms and you talk about different experts coming in, you know, the counseling psychologists, the sex health specialists, the financial experts, all these people, they come in and they basically turn this matchmaking business into a numbers game now.
Absolutely.
They work it out. They use formulas, calculations, whatever.
Absolutely.
So then this whole notion of, oh, I'm going to meet the one, and when it happens, I'm going to feel butterflies in my tummy.
So let me tell you,
and I'm going to hear
season.
The soundtrack to some romantic movie.
So the first season was a couple, Jamie and Doug. There was a couple in there, Jamie and Doug. Jamie is the girl. She literally walked down the aisle and she saw this guy. In her mind, all she saw was Shrek. Like, literally. She couldn't look at him. She looked at, like, everything besides him.
And he thought she was pretty.
He was smitten.
Oh, dear.
They are the couple who have outlasted everyone.
Okay, all right.
You know, 2-3 years down the line, they are the couple to beat. Because, yes, essentially, it is about the pheromones. It's about seeing this person. It's about falling deeply in love. And that doesn't happen. The couple that did, you know, look good together and they had the sexual attraction from them, they didn't even make it through the 12 weeks. She was just like, you need to go. Take your stuff. Take your smelly mattress. Because literally this guy was like, I'm not going to sleep on your bed. What a shitty bed. And he brought his mattress from downtown Queens or whatever, and he brought it, and she was like, okay, cool, we can't do this anymore because I actually hate your guts. And he took his mattress and he bounced.
Yeah, that's not a good place to start with your marriage.
Absolutely.
And with
not.
All that stuff. Look, I'm very excited to see how this show pans out, especially in the South African context. You know, as I said, there's potential for all kinds of things to go wrong.
There are a lot of mothers out there who are going to be pulling their sons on some, okay, so why am I here? Are we not for lunch? You
this
said we were
thing.
Going to Sentin for lunch. What is this?
This is the thing, though, is...
Andile.
Yeah.
Andile. I did not raise you to be this guy.
Yeah.
Oban Laba.
Because there's always some elder who'll tell you about how this is not how our people do things.
Absolutely.
I can't even imagine trying to have this conversation with my father to say, okay, so we're here today because I'm going to get married. No, yes. You've never met him. Oh, neither have I.
Oh, did I mention that?
My dad would be like, wasanya.
And that's the last thing you say to you. Oh, that's the music. Gotta go.
See you on the other side as Mrs. I'm about to find
out.
I'm not sure. I'd like us to get into the, you know, get deeper into the family dynamics around this kind of setup, but then also just like, you know, things that are happening like in my own family. Mm. Because, you know, family dynamics, always tricky, always such a delicate thing to try and manage and control, and, you know, people's feelings are involved.
Absolutely.
And I can just imagine the kind of family dynamics that are going to evolve from a show like this, Married at First Sight. So it will be interesting. I'm with Belinda Khojani this morning, joining us, or joining me rather, filling in for Tumi Moraike, who, as I said, you know, she's away, she's working hard. Bereka Mosadi is her thing.
Yeah.
And she's just bagged herself a brand new TV show. She'll tell us all about it next week when she's back. But in the meantime, how about a little Justin Bieber? Yeah. Yeah. It's Justin Bieber himself on his way to the country. When is it again? In May.
Yep.
And you were just telling me that you're trying to get tickets last minute.
I need to get, but not just any tickets. I need to get meet and greet tickets.
Those ones that cost like 15,000.
Correct. Somebody's bond. Car payment.
Oh my gosh. Is this for
school fees?
Is this for the kids?
This is for the little one. The one. The 6-year-old who's just turned 6 last week.
Oh, sweet man.
He, I think, would just love to meet his ultimate. Okay, this is someone who does not know how to write. Only knows how to write his name.
Yeah.
Does not know how to read. Doesn't know how to tell the time. Doesn't quite know his left from right. But give him any electronic device and he will Google Justin Bieber.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's the first thing. He will go for the YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he will Google Justin Bieber, and he knows the songs from when Justin Bieber was still busking and singing on the street with a guitar and a little kopi in front of him.
Jeepers.
To get coins. This guy knows all the words to all the songs.
So this is the guy that you're trying to get meet and greet tickets
I need
for.
To get him. I don't want sweet tickets.
Oh my God.
So I think I should actually open a GoFundMe page.
Hey, listen, those are popular. Hey, those are,
yeah,
those are things that you can do these days as a, you know, as a source of income.
Right.
Nyana.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll maybe just get me a GoFundMe page and just hope that, you know, the cents trickle into rands and the rands, you know, trickle into thousands.
But are you going to attach some Sobnyana story to it to make it more compelling? Or are you just going to be like, listen,
like
guys,
he's got one kidney and no.
I'm pretty sure people have done some shady stuff
just,
like that.
They'll just be a little write-up.
Yeah. Like
just a little write-up and a picture, perhaps.
Yes.
To say, you know. And, you know, if it doesn't happen this year, I'm sure Justin Bieber, this is his second time
coming to
in the country,
yeah.
So surely there are going to be many more.
Do they even let 6-year-olds into, like,
listen, it will happen this
okay.
time.
All right,
I'm sure they do,
into a concert venue. I mean, sure, you can't send him by himself.
Just order him an Uber. Your Uber's here.
Well, you know, we'll see you later.
Yeah, just make sure they don't put you in the boot.
No, I'd actually be curious to know whether there's an age limit in terms of what's the youngest that you can bring a child into, say, like a Soccer City stadium for a concert.
Look, and a company, this is, you can't, like, it's not like you're on a flight where you can send someone on and there'll be an air hostess who's going to come and take him onto the flight and sit with him for the duration of the flight.
Yeah.
Needs to be accompanied, I would think, with an adult.
Yes.
Someone he knows, yeah. Not just like a random Uber driver. I'm here for the next 3 hours because I'm driving him around. No.
You know, that's my customer for the night.
Yeah, you do. Oh, that sounds so bad.
Sorry, that's the customer I'm taking care of this evening.
For the evening, correct.
Yes.
But Justin Bieber appealing to that age group as well, I would think it would only make sense to have, you know, 6-7-year-olds, maybe 8-year-olds, maybe from 8.
Yeah. He's got a wide market that he appeals to, right?
Absolutely.
Because he's got the young kids, like your 6-year-old son.
Correct.
Then I'm thinking of my nephew, who's now 11, turning 20.
Yeah.
he's such a man now.
He's a guy.
You know, and he's also into the whole Justin Bieber thing. And then, of course, you have the mothers of these children.
There we go. You've got the full package. You've got the mothers bringing the 11-year-olds, and then the 8 and the 6-year-olds just happen to tag along.
Yeah, yeah.
And also remember that Justin Bieber grew up in the business. So he has the shaky little kid voice. You know you love me. Mm-hmm. You know you care, baby. Because I do know all the words.
Yeah.
And
you would, though, because you've been,
cause I'm,
you're listening to this stuff on
in
a
my
daily
car.
Basis. Yeah.
Yes. And he appeals then to those kids, and then he's grown up in the business, and then he appeals to the 10, 12-year-olds, and now he's, what, 20-something, and now he's singing about love and all sorts of things, and being in relationships and being out of relationships, and he then, I mean, those words appeal to anyone who's looking for love, whether you're young and old, MILF or not.
Mm. Yeah, no, this is true. He's got the market cornered.
Correct.
I've got my friend Belinda Khojani joining me, by the way, if you're wondering who this sexy, sultry voice belongs to.
Oh, stop.
Because Jimmy Morake is away on business, you know, doing her thing. But so earlier we were talking about this Married at First Sight, this TV show. Now coming to South Africa, it will kick off this coming Friday. But, you know, just doing a young Google search, Nyana, there are actually a number of shows that I didn't even know were out there that existed. But some of these shows are just... Okay, so I knew about a show called Dating in the Dark.
Yes.
Which was exactly what it is.
Yes.
The two of you walk into a dark room, you cannot see each other, you have a conversation, and then based on whether you felt like there's a spark from that conversation, you will then get to see each other in the light.
Correct.
To determine whether... whether this chemistry that you felt, having not known what the person looked like, is the real deal.
So essentially, it's the inverse of Married at First Sight. Because literally, the sight comes in at the end.
Right at the end.
Right.
Okay, and then there's love at first kiss.
Okay.
See, now I don't understand. So what happens here? Don't die on me. Don't die on me. What happens here? Oh, there was also a show that I remember reading about or seeing. This one involved people being naked. Naked dating or something like that. You're still dying. Should we get you some water? Yeah, let's somebody's going to bring you some water. No, there was something along the lines of either you're all on a beach together, but you're always naked, or there was definitely something
where people go on.
Oh, okay. Ooh. No. B? All right. No, that's fine. So this love at first kiss. I'm assuming, you know, it's very self-implied. So you meet each other, and then what? Before you even exchange any kind of conversation, you just start sucking each other's faces off? How does this one work?
Essentially, you get to say hi.
Okay.
And it's a white room, and somebody just waits there, and you kind of, oh my God, I don't know, like, what is he going to look like? Is she short? Is she tall? Is she fat? And this person walks in, and they go straight for your face.
You know, which is in the contract. It's not like, I didn't see him coming.
Right.
Okay.
And some people get it right, some people don't. And that is really scary. And what they've had is a guy who's never kissed in his life. Laid his manly lips on another woman's bodily parts.
Oh, my God. No, you see. But that's how you get ratings, though. Because you want to have that guy who's never kissed before.
True.
And, you know, you want to have that woman who's like, oh, I'm waiting for this kind of kiss. And Prince then he comes charming. In not knowing what
no
he's
clue.
Doing, poor guy.
And you will not believe that they actually do have experts who also come to the show, because that guy had no clue on what he was doing. So he had to try not once, not twice, maybe not even three times, but four times to get it right. And they had an expert come in to show. Now, imagine this. There is a woman out there whose job on the daily is to train people how to kiss.
But now, does she do this?
First of all, she's white.
Okay.
Because no black person in their right mind.
Okay.
Would be like, okay, so what you need to do is, you know, take this olive, put it in your mouth.
Oh, is that how they teach?
They have AIDS.
All right.
No, not like HIV.
No.
They have teaching AIDS.
What, like what?
So, first of all, she is the main teaching aid, because she kind of has the part that needs to be used. And this woman sat next to this guy and was like, okay, cool. So your tongue, put it in your your mouth for this long. You need to close your eyes. Stop looking at me. And then obviously, because she needs to use her mouth to talk, she'd have to pull back and then give him the instruction and then lean in again. And he had an overbite. Serious, like one of those people when they ask you to bite your apple, you're just like, I'll give you some.
So wait a minute. So this woman goes around basically kissing hundreds of people for a living.
Correct.
Oh, see, I don't know how I would feel about that.
Look, if it brings in the bacon, man.
No, I know. I get that. But, you know, I mean, because kissing is supposed to be like this nice, sensual, intimate thing. And then when you're doing it on an instructional level, can you imagine how many times you're dealing with people getting it wrong? You know, they swallow up your entire mouth and part of your nose in the process, because guy just can't figure out. No, you're really not supposed to swallow my whole face.
Correct.
Just nibble on my... No, I don't.
And those are things that you would think come naturally. She has to put them into words.
But guys,
and make sure you understand the instruction. Now do it. And then she needs to do it.
But who taught us how to kiss, B?
It was trial and error.
Well, that's why I'm thinking, like,
there's some guy out there going, no, I don't know what you are talking about. What do you mean she's married? It means that she kissed a lot of people and she finally got it right. But according to me, worst kiss I've ever known.
And how do you know if you're a good kisser or not?
You don't. I think you have to have like at least five or more people tell you that you actually you kiss well.
Or if they don't say that you do kiss well, just absolutely don't have somebody come back and say to you, listen, so your game needs a little bit of work. I mean, and how would you even tell somebody that they're a bad kisser?
Because by then you're broken up, right? You would hope you'd have broken up by then. And you just won't get feedback.
No, because usually, you know, people just go their separate ways and that's it. Speaking of being broken up and people going their separate ways. So I have a friend who's now finding herself in a situation where, you know, they're dealing with a divorce in the family, blah, blah, blah. And it's just so interesting to me because, you know, people who go through divorce will always tell you, you know, they'll say things like, it's possibly the second most traumatic thing after dealing with the death of someone.
I think it's the third, hey? Because first is death, second is moving house.
Oh, so moving house still trumps divorce. Okay. Yeah, because so anyway, she was telling me it's a whole situation, but just going deeper into the family dynamics is where it's really starting to, you know, to affect people and to hurt, because you know when these people got to marry, y'all came together and it was like,
we all made that commitment. Yeah. You know when you said I do, we were like, we too do.
We all do. This is a big family affair.
Correct.
And now because you know these two people couldn't make it work. And I mean, it's so difficult because what are you supposed to do as, you know, as a family member watching either your son or your daughter or your brother or sister going through this thing? You automatically have to pick a side, and the side is obviously your blood.
And you need to shut up and just face down.
Dude.
It's like you're saying, it's not just trauma for the people who are involved, the two. It's traumatic. It's kind of a sporadic thing that, okay, this is the mushroom effect. Everybody else gets involved. You know, when you're in the group, the family group, and then it's just mang left.
Yeah. Or you physically kicked somebody out of the group. You're like, no, we can't have this person in here anymore because, you know.
So-and-so changed the number. Admin is just like, yeah, no. Leslie won't be part of the group.
No, it's tricky, man. It's tricky.
It's absolutely tricky. And I mean, if you take into consideration what we've just discussed now in terms of having things like Married at First Sight and Kiss at First Sight, and you know, it now is just generating a different, you know, kettle of fish. Because if you do, you know, come from that kind of setup, where you've never met this person before, and here you are now having a great, wonderful life, and you know, you forced families together, not families that have, you know, organically kind of merged, and you've got to organically meet and that kind of stuff. All of a sudden, you've got, you know, a family of gingers coming to the house for lunch on a Sunday. Your mom has said she's going to make mukhodu, and here we are with the insides of a cow, and freaking them are just like, what?
I don't understand.
How is this happening?
How does this work in your life? Correct. You know, and you know, your own mother-in-law, for example, because you know mothers-in-law are very precious about their makoti.
Absolutely.
Like, makoti waka, this, that, and the other. And now all of a sudden this woman is just, you know, thrust on her.
Yes.
But it does speak a lot to the way that things have changed over the years with regards to how we approach relationships and dating and that whole thing. So, you know, these days it's very common for somebody to tell you, oh no, I met him on this dating site.
Yes.
Or on some dating app. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that kind of thing. Or on a TV show.
Right.
It's becoming the norm.
Right. And it's not a bad thing. That's what happens. You know, we evolve. Things change. We can't always, you know, be meeting at the mall because we don't go to the mall. We now have online shopping.
Yeah.
We don't bump into people in the parking lot. It's that kind of thing because we Uber now. So the idea of, you know, getting into relationships in a different way kind of needs to be the norm. But I think the norm then that comes with it is that some relationships aren't built on, you know, the precious big amounts of time and resources that we spend on them, that they do end up in divorce or separation or things like that, where there wasn't really much to stand on in terms of foundation.
But I think also as time has moved on, the requirements that we would initially have wanted from meeting a potential life partner has also changed. So, for example, where before a lot of women would have been like, oh, no, I want, you know, the whole experience of seeing him from across the room and our eyes met mm-hmm. and I felt butterflies in my tummy. And, mm-hmm. you know, we started talking and we dated and did it. Now, you know, people are more than happy to say, yeah, okay, fine, put me on a show. I don't care as long as I just find this person.
Right.
I don't care what the process involves. It doesn't have to be romantic anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't need, you know, to impose some 90-day rule. Like,
here we go. Here we go.
The things that we've required, you know, that we initially wanted before from the process of meeting someone, that also seems to be falling away. Like, just, you know, if I'll just swipe.
And swipe left.
I'll just swipe, and if he's good enough, he's good enough. You know,
and you'll figure that out on the first date. And you're right. Things have changed. I mean, even then, once you've had that relationship and you're now taking it to the next level, even those dynamics have changed, where couples are actually saying, actually, we don't need, you know, a super lustrous one day affair where people are going to be eating things they don't necessarily eat off the menu when they go out to restaurants. Why don't we actually just, you know, go to Home Affairs, sign, and you and I can take a holiday and go away.
Yeah.
Now, you know, my mom, my mother would be like, no. Okay, because she needs to invite the next door neighbor and that friend she went to school with.
That you actually don't have any kind of relationship with.
No clue who they are. Yeah. But, you know, there's that extension that it needs to happen because there are people that need to get involved. And so it also happens in the demise of the relationship. There are the people who will get involved because then the people who were there initially as... And I'm speaking from a traditional kind of marriage, Zulu marriage, where there's amalobolo that go out and, you know, there are negotiators who negotiate on the behalf of the groom mm. with the bride's family to say, look, we are coming in, you know, into partnership and da-da-da-da-da, and this is a dowry and that kind of stuff. These are the same people who need to get involved at the end of the relationship as well.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
Oh, so do they get roped into the
I mean, you can't just wake up and say, yeah, I've been dealing with these socks on the floor for a while now. Actually, this is not working out for me. So are you free, you know, on Monday at 12 o'clock so we can go down to the magistrate's court and actually just get this over with?
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that. You know, the people who are involved initially, even the pastor, so the same person who ordained your marriage and was just, you need to go through that process. If you went through the process of marriage counseling in a church more specifically, that pastor also needs to get involved to say, okay, guys, you've tried this, you've tried secular things, now we are going to get God involved. Okay.
We're going to turn it over to the guy with the most power.
Because y'all thought y'all knew everything. We're going to get him involved. And then once that then fails, and this chick is still like, Joanne is still like, you know what? It's not just the socks. It's the fact that he can't put the dish in the sink.
Yeah.
It's the fact that when he parks in the garage, he parks skew. And, you know, he revs the car way too loud. Doesn't, you know, it's those things that you need to go, okay, cool. Maybe you don't feel, you know, all too great about that situation, but do understand that there are millions of other people who are going through it. Have you seen the bigger picture?
I know, but it almost seems to me like that exacerbates the problem. So when you could have just said
the smelly socks.
No. Well, I mean, that's always an issue.
Right.
But when you could have just gone with your, you know, your current husband and say, okay, so listen, this is not working. So you and I are going to do A, B, C, D. It's done. Now, the fact that you are involving all those uncles who were required in the initial process and the pastor and the this and the that, that to me almost feels like it's just making the burden on your shoulders feel even heavier because now you've got so many other voices climbing into the conversation of what is supposed to be an agreement between you and this man.
But also understand, Mabali, is that, you know, if when you go and buy a car, you don't just walk into one dealership. You don't go into VW and go, that Polo, that's the one.
The Vrpa.
It's mine. Yeah, I'm taking the Vrpa. It's mine. you've got to, number one, look at other makes of the car, speak to other people. How does it perform? Da, da, da. So you get a, you know, kind of a weighed in, you know, response about this particular thing. So in as much as you as Mabali have an issue with Frick and you're like, Frick, this is not working out, somebody else has got to tell you, you know, the flip side of the story. Actually, Frick is the correct height. He's got the correct genome in terms of having kids. I mean, do you want kids who are going to have curly hair? Yes, there'll be gingers, but you know. And you've got to get, you know, the perspective of other people to say, am I making the right decision? Am I doing the correct? What am I missing? Before you just wake up one morning and just, you know, say, you know, on our way to work, I actually think we should go and see the advocate because this is just not working for either of us.
Okay, look, good point, well made. I'm just always a little bit concerned because, so with this friend that I was talking about, so, you know, it's a case of the decision has been taken for the couple to go their separate ways. So as the supportive family member, you want to be very careful not to, you know, to get too involved mm-hmm. in their debacle, in their situation. So, mm-hmm. you know, yes, you might have your own opinion or you might genuinely wanting to be give this person advice, mm-hmm. you know, from a supportive base. But at the same time, you need to be very careful that you don't, you know, you don't start telling people what mm-hmm. you think they should do, you know, which is what happens a lot with, you know, with elders, mm-hmm. is people coming in and saying, okay, so listen, so I think that you should do X instead of Y because, you know, you kids are getting it wrong here. Da, 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 da. That's my only concern. It's sometimes, yes, coming from a loving, supportive place, you know, people could end up trying to impose their own feelings onto your situation.
But the trick there is to, number one, speak from experience. So whoever then feels that way needs to be someone who's actually experienced in that thing.
Yeah, it can't be Tandi who had a bad marriage because her man cheated on her. You can't have Tandi giving you advice.
But understand that Tandi has good insights. It can't be Alan, who's been single for the past 5 years,
yeah,
you know, saying, my guy, do it. if that's what you want to do, you must do it.
Yeah.
Because Alan has no clue.
Mm.
Whereas Tandi has an idea. She's come out of the situation, you know.
She came out scarred.
On the one side of the spectrum.
Possibly bitter.
Correct, correct. She went through a specific process. So she did get married.
Yeah.
She was in a loving relationship. And then something happened. And I think that, you know, you have to be very, as the person who's receiving the advice, you need to be very careful about who you're listening to and which pearls of wisdom you're taking out of this. You know, you can't always be listening to Tandi. Tandi cannot be, you know, because she came out on the one side of the spectrum. You've also need to listen to Tandi's story as to Tandi. You also had the good times. And what were those? Why didn't they see you through to the other side of the spectrum? What did you do that got you here? And if, you know, the person who is in the situation really is at that point where, you know, there's still a chance or whatever, they need to make that decision as to what it is they want to get out of it. The same like the people who are going on to married at first sight.
Yo, okay, you know what? I'm getting the wave, the customary wave of wrap it up from Bales on the other side, who was very nice to try and give us the that WhatsApp number. Shame, you tried, but you know, between the three of us, I don't know what happened there. Thank you for joining me, Belinda. Love to have you back at a later stage for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Look, it's been an interesting hour of, you know, family dynamics, relationships, and just weird stuff happening, man. And you know, this show starts this Friday, as I said earlier, before Married at First Sight, the South African edition. I can't wait. I'm dying.
I would love to see who they're going to have on.
Oh my
god. Tembinkosi marrying Sharon from Sandhurst.
Oh, Jesus.
Tembinkosi from Pimville. Oh yeah.
It is an interesting country that we live in, so it potentially makes for a lot of great TV viewing. Dumi Morake will be back with us next week, and then she can fill us all in on what is keeping her so busy. What's keeping her away from me? Damn you, Dumi. Back with you next week, Tuesday, for another edition of Sipping Tea. CliffCentral.com.